Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Monday Night Lights. I'm your host, Beau Marchant. Tonight we have a jam-packed night of fulfillment here. We got Ralph Mancini. He's going to be coming on later tonight. We got the New England Patriots and Atlanta Falcons on the clock. We got Justin Wolfenden. He's going to come on and give us some insights to the draft. We got small school insider Josh Buchanan. Andrew Johnson, former Akron Zip, he's going to be joining us as well. And we got a lot of action going on right now. We got Fred Jackson, Buffalo Bills running back. He didn't attend the Buffalo workout today. He's kind of using some pull since Marshawn Lynch is in legal trouble and could face suspension by the commissioner. Jackson looks like he's going to play a little hardball with the Bills, trying to get some more money. Jackson was very successful last season, spelling Lynch. We also had Jeff Garcia signing with the Oakland Raiders. I don't really think that's going to affect Jamarcus Russell. For those of you who think it might, remember Kerry Collins had almost the same, if not exact, statistics as Jamarcus Russell, and Kerry Collins went to the Pro Bowl. Darren Sharper, he signed with the Saints. We have a little trade news. Laurent Robinson, wide receiver from the Falcons. He was traded to the St. Louis Rams, which I think is a nice addition to go along with youngster Donnie Avery. I'm personally a real high guy on Laurent Robinson. That also opens up Harry Douglas for the Falcons, giving them Roddy White, Jenkins, and Douglas. I think Douglas is another nice sleeper to keep your eye on. And we're going to hit the phone lines here. Who do we have calling in?
Hey, Bo.
Hey, what's up, my man?
Hey, this is Ralph Mancini. How's it going?
How you doing, Ralph? How you doing tonight? Good?
I'm doing pretty well, man.
Excellent. Now, I know we're going to do a little New England Patriots, Atlanta Falcons on the clock, and it's kind of hard to believe that if I said which team made the playoffs last season, it's hard to say the Falcons and the Patriots stayed home, huh?
You know, I think that the Atlanta Falcons are Hello? Yeah. I think the Atlanta Falcons are a fascinating team to look at because when you take a look at their roster, I mean, this team has a lot of holes for an 11-5 team. This is not your typical playoff team. And, you know, I think going into the draft, I think they have a lot of areas of need, especially along their defense.
Yeah, speaking of their defense, I mean, I think even heading into last season, I didn't think they would make the playoffs, but considering the Vic situation and Bobby Petrino leaving, I mean, you had a guy like Warwick Dunn, who is considered a saint in the NFL circles. I mean, he even wanted to go after Petrino. I think there was only upside, but I agree with you with the Falcons having to address the defense. What do you think they'll do on the draft?
Well, you know, I think that it all starts at outside linebacker. You know, they lost two key components of that defense in free agency, and I'm talking about Keith Brooking, who was a mainstay there for years, and Michael Boley, who went to the New York Giants, who, you know, I think that was a great pickup for the Big Blue. But now, I mean, I know they picked up Mike Peterson as a free agent from the Jacksonville Jaguars, but, you know, he's a guy that gets hurt a lot, and he's a guy that really needs to be protected by some big defensive tackle. So, in my opinion, I think it starts at outside linebacker. And also, when you take a look at their defensive tackle position, they could also use some help over there. You know, Grady Jackson is a guy who's not a superstar, but he's definitely a big body. He helps out in stopping the run. He's a big guy that offenses have a hard time contending with. And so I think it would also benefit them to find another defensive tackle since Grady Jackson's no longer with the team. And, hey, what about defensive end? I mean, I know that John Abraham was just magnificent last year, but Jamal Anderson has been, I mean, let's face it, let's be honest, he's been a bust up until now. You would think that with all the attention that John Abraham is getting on the other side, you would think that Anderson would be able to put up more than two sacks. And then, you know, also they also had Lawyer Malloy, who wasn't re-signed, so they have another hole at safety. They're going to go with the youngster Thomas Dacute as a starter, the former Jet Eric Coleman, who's, you know, an okay player, but, you know, they could definitely use, they could definitely build some more depth at the safety position. And at cornerback, their best cover corner, Dominique Foxworth, was signed by the Baltimore Ravens. And so what do they have left now? Chris Houston and Von Hutchins? You might say that...
Yeah, they got Cord Wire playing linebacker.
Yeah. And I mean, when you take a look at those cornerbacks, you might say they're up-and-coming players, but they don't make enough plays. They only had three interceptions between them. So you take a look at every position of this defense. They could use help at outside linebacker, defensive tackle, defensive end, safety, and cornerback. So, you know, it's not inconceivable to think that maybe Atlanta might just focus on defense with all their picks in the upcoming draft.
I think they select 24th in this coming draft. Who do you think they'll go after directly? Is there anyone that you think they're focused on at this point?
You know, when you get to that point in the draft, I think that there are a bunch of guys. You can't say that it's one or two guys. You have to be lucky for certain guys to fall to you at 24. You know, I would think maybe if you're looking for a good pass rushing outside linebacker slash defensive end, maybe a guy like Aaron Maben, if he falls down that far, which he probably would, I'm thinking, maybe he can help them out at that position. That wouldn't be the worst pick in the world, although I can also see him fall down to the second round. You know, maybe a guy like Perry Ajeri could be a guy that can help them out with some pass rushing skills, a guy who can rush the passer from the defensive tackle position. He's more of a 4-3 guy as opposed to a 3-4 nose tackle. So, you know, maybe a couple of, those are a couple of names right there that I think could step in and provide some help.
Now, talking about last year's draft, they took Curtis Lofton in the second round. It seems like he held his own. I think that led them to let go of somebody like the aging Keith Brooking. How about some of the other guys that they drafted, like Thomas DeKalb and stuff? What do you think about him? Is there any shot of him at the safety position producing this year?
Yeah, I think so. I think they like Thomas DeKalb a lot. As a matter of fact, he is currently listed as one of their starters on defense. And as I said, with the departure of Lawyer Malloy, they're going to need a player like Thomas DeKalb to step up. But, you know, another position on the other side of the ball that we didn't address is tight end. You know, really, since the departure of Aljay Crumpler, the Atlanta Falcons really don't have a pass-catching threat at the position. I mean, what do you really have there? You have maybe Justin Peel. You have Ben Hartsock. You know, none of these guys could be considered a go-to guy for Matt Ryan.
We were speaking with Ryan Purvis, and we were asking him if he had any BC connection, if he could get any pull by Ryan to get him down there in Atlanta. He was joking that he couldn't.
Yeah, that would be a nice pickup, you know, if Purvis, if you know, maybe in the later rounds, Purvis is there, if they could reunite him and his old quarterback together, you know, that would be a great fit.
Now, I know you're a big fan, or at least I think you like him. Laurent Robinson got traded to the Rams tonight. What do you think about that, and you think that will help Harry Douglas move up?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, Laurent Robinson is a great talent, but he hasn't been able to stay healthy. I think Harry Douglas is definitely a player. You know, a lot of people sort of discarded him last year because he's not the biggest receiver out there, about 5'10", maybe 170. But, you know, this is a kid who can play. You know, he can get open. He's quick. And I know that Matt Ryan likes throwing him the football. So, you know, I think Harry Douglas is a player, and I like the fact that the Rams went out and got Laurent Robinson. You know, now that they have Robinson, they could pair him up with Avery. They're going to have two speedsters out there that a lot of teams are going to have a hard time contending with.
You think the Falcons have another playoff run in them, or do you think they'll finish at the bottom of their division?
You know, I think they're going to need some lucky breaks.
I think
they're going to need some lucky breaks. I mean, can I see them making the playoffs? Yeah. I mean, when you have Matt Ryan, a franchise quarterback there, you have an excellent running game, a very underrated offensive line, and Roddy White at wide receiver. Obviously, they have the talent to score points. The question marks come on defense. Can that defense hang with all those other teams in that division or in the NFC conference? That's where the real question mark is. So right now, I really want to see how the Falcons fare in the draft. Are they going to be able to bring in at least two or three impact players on defense in this upcoming draft? And if they do, I'll give them a much better chance of making the playoffs. But right now, I don't know. I don't like this defense the way it's constructed right now.
And we're talking with Ralph Mancini, NFL Draft Bible guru and all-around football knowledge guy. Ralph, we're talking about the Atlanta Falcons and what they need to address on draft day. We're talking about defense. Do you think maybe the front office would still maybe switch gears and go with, like we're talking about tight end, give Matt Ryan even some more help and neglect the defense?
Well, you know, it depends. You know, I mean, if that guy is there, if that impact player is there, you know, for instance, if a guy like Jared Cook is there available to them, you know, maybe that's the type of guy you might want to bring in despite all your deficiencies on defense, because, you know, he's head and shoulders better, at least as a pass catcher, than most of the other tight ends coming out in the draft. So you might want to make an exception for him, but really, you know, I would focus on tight end later on. I think you brought up a nice player who could be available to them later on in the draft, like Ryan Purvis. You know, if I were Thomas Dimitroff, as I said, I would really focus in day one on defense and then look for a tight end later on, maybe in the fifth or sixth round.
Excellent. We're talking a little about Atlanta Falcons football. We're going to switch it up here, and we're going to put the New England Patriots on the clock. 11-5, they missed the playoffs. I think defense is obviously the overwhelming, glaring need there, too. You look at the past couple seasons, they had a 21-6 lead at halftime on the Colts at the AFC Championship game. They blew that. They lost 38-34. The following season, with under 3 minutes left, they blow the lead to the Giants. I think you know as well as I do, it's an aging defense. They're needy of all type of help on that side of the ball. Do you think they address safety, defensive back, linebacker? Where do they head to the end of this year's draft?
Well, I think that they should, first and foremost, whether they bring in a linebacker or safety or what have you, I think they really need to focus on their pass rush. And what you've been hearing during the offseason is, early on in the offseason, you heard them having some interest in Julius Peppers. That talk has died down recently. But what you have heard lately is that Jason Taylor is a guy that they might want to bring in as a free agent. Now, you know, Jason Taylor is at the end of his rope pretty much, about 35 years old, and really, I don't know where his head is right now, acting, dancing. He's got a bunch of other outside interests. So
the Redskins would have signed him, but they already did it. So.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, the thing is that, you know, Jason Taylor, he might be a good stopgap type of guy. You know, really, you're hearing also that the Dolphins might be interested in bringing him back as well. So I think that the New England Patriots should look at outside linebacker first and foremost. You know, last year, they only had 31 sacks. They were pretty much a middle-of-the-road team in that department. And their leading sacker was Adalius Thomas, who only had 5. You know, if you go back 2 years prior, Mike Vrabel had 12.5 sacks. Last year, only had 4. So although this New England defense isn't bad by any means, it's not the same defense that won multiple Super Bowls, and it definitely needs a threat, you know, that Lawrence Taylor type of outside linebacker, that pass rusher. That's what they really need first and foremost.
Going back to Julius Peppers, I want to ask you a few questions. What do you think he would be like if they have him at the outside linebacker position? And also, it always strikes me that New England is a team on draft day. They moved Drew Bledsoe on day 2 to Buffalo. They acquired Randy Moss on day 2 from Oakland. Is this going to be the same type of deal where they wait second day and then, you know, you're sitting there watching fourth, fifth round of the draft and then, boom, you see it going across the bottom of the screen, Julius Peppers to New England?
Well, it wouldn't surprise me. You know, Julius Peppers is not happy in Carolina. And he thinks that if he goes to the right defense, his sack numbers are going to go way up. And, I mean, if you're Carolina, do you really want an unhappy Julius Peppers on your team? You know, at a certain point, it might be detrimental. It might serve them better if they try to move him and get some draft picks in return. So I think if anything is going to happen, it has to happen before the draft, because if you're going to move Julius Peppers, you would want at least one first round pick, you know. And so you know, you might say that it could happen on day two, but I think it might happen. Probably, if it does happen, I think it's going to happen right before the draft, maybe the week of the draft.
Yeah, they think New England has three of the top 47 picks, so they have a real shot at getting them. I mean, they have the picks to do it, and I think they're third overall in total picks. So even if they make a big trade for Peppers, they're not going to be lacking picks.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I mean, Peppers is coming from a 4-3 type of system, but I think he can definitely play outside linebacker. You know, he's definitely athletic enough. He's got the height. He's got the jumping ability. I mean, this guy has it all. If they plug him in an outside linebacker, they're looking at a guy that's definitely going to get them double-digit sacks.
Now, with Bill O'Brien taking over as offensive coordinator, do you think we're going to see any changes in the Patriots' offense?
No, not really. You know, I think they're going to stick with what they've got. And I think that the key is that, you know, if Brady comes back healthy, I think that's really the key. You know, they still have Randy Moss. You still have Wes Welker. You still have the key components there, the big play guys. You know, I think the biggest question mark as far as offense goes is the running game. You know, is Lawrence Maroney finally going to stay healthy and emerge as that feature running back? You know, I think a lot rests on his shoulders. But, you know, if he gets hurt again, or if he starts bouncing those runs to the outside as he has in the past couple of years, then you also have Fred Taylor. You know, how much does he have left in the tank? You know, I think he's still a quality player, but, you know, he needs some help. So I think that the emergence of Lawrence Maroney is going to be key for this New England offense. And, you know, now that we're speaking of offense also, I mean, what do they really have at wide receiver once you get past Randy Moss and Wes Welker? I know they brought in Joey Galloway, but, you know, he's, what, 37, 38 years old, and the guy hasn't been able to stay healthy the past couple of years.
Yeah, I've seen some drafts where they had, you know, the Patriots taking somebody like Knowshon Moreno if he was to fall that far down to him. Do you think that's an actual possibility? Just, you know, I mean, he is a top talent. Maroney hasn't been able to stay healthy. I think, like you addressed, Morris and Falk and Taylor, I think they got about 30 years combined of total football in them. Do you think Maroney, even though they have all the empty spots that need filled on defense, would they jump the gun on somebody like that?
Well, it would make sense for them to bring in a guy like Knowshon Moreno. You know, because you even brought up some of the backups there. Even a guy like Sammy Morris. I mean, this guy's another guy that can't stay on the field. So if you bring in a guy like Knowshon Moreno, I think he would fit in very well.
Now, we're talking – now, you think the Patriots, you know, we know the defense is lacking, so you think they're going to address defensive line, though, if they go defense?
I think that they're gonna address outside linebacker.
Okay.
I think they need that pass rusher, that guy that can get them double-digit sacks. When your leading pass rusher last year was Adalius Thomas with 5 sacks, when you only had 31 sacks as a team, I think they need to focus on outside linebacker, you know, somebody who can play that Lawrence Taylor type of position. And then you also look at the safety position and at cornerback. I think that they could definitely use help at both those positions. I mean, you know, focusing in on cornerback for a little while here. I mean, do they have a number one shutdown cornerback? You know, Ty Law was that type of cornerback during his heyday, and Asante Samuel was that type of cornerback before he left for the Philadelphia Eagles. But right now, I mean, I know they brought in Sean Springs, but he's, you know, a little long in the tooth. He's about 33 years old. So, you know, I think that if they feel that, you know, that type of cornerback is out there in the draft, I think they're certainly going to give a hard look at that type of player.
I'm looking at somebody like Brandon Merriweather. How far do you think he's come, and what type of player do you think he is?
I think he's come along. You know, I really didn't like what I saw of him in his rookie season, but I think he's gotten a bit better. But, you know, he doesn't really scare me. I take a look at Merriweather. I take a look at James Sanders, and I don't think those guys measure up to Rodney Harrison. You know, when Rodney Harrison was in his prime, when he was that intimidator, when he was that guy that used to just knock the snot out of people going across the middle. You know, I think that's what I would be looking for if I'm the New England Patriots.
And talking a little bit more about their defensive unit, I think Jerod Mayo, I mean, he was tremendous last season.
Yes.
Just a beast out there. With Merriweather, do you think they kind of made a boo-boo by not re-signing Asante Samuel last season?
Yeah. I mean, I think so. I mean, Asante Samuel, I think, is one of the arguably one of the top five cornerbacks in the league. And, you know, he's in his prime right now, and I think that definitely hurt them. You know, last year they picked up a bunch of guys, you know, like Delta O'Neal. You know, he was certainly ineffective. You know, they picked up a bunch of veterans that really weren't, you know, nothing special, that didn't come near Asante Samuel in terms of talent. So, I think that was sort of a boo-boo, as you put it.
Now, do you think that, I mean, them not franchising him or tagging him, I mean, they were willing to, I don't think they were going to keep Castle, but they did tag him, and they were going to have to pay him $14 million. Do you think they thought that they could just plug guys in and replace Asante, or did you feel like they just didn't want to resign him because of the money?
Yeah, I think it was a money issue. You know, the Patriots, a lot of times they have this mentality that no one is bigger than the team. You know, I mean, unless it's a Tom Brady type of player, you know, the Patriots aren't going to go above and beyond everyone else to just secure that one player. And the Patriots really thought that if they could bring in enough guys from free agency to come in, they thought that, you know, maybe they would be able to find that one guy who could emerge and at least be something close to what Asante Samuel was. They also drafted Terrence Wheatley last year. It was pretty decent. But that's their attitude a lot of times at the Patriots. It's not about finding that superstar. It's about finding a collection of quality players.
And talking about a collection of quality players, they're switching gears a little bit. There was a lot of NFL news tonight. We had Jeff Garcia going to the Oakland Raiders. Do you think he'll have any chance of getting any playing time behind Jamarcus Russell?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's a better quarterback than Russell right now. You know, I mean, I know he's 39 years old, and I know he's not, you know, the most durable quarterback out there. But right now, I would have more faith in Jeff Garcia leading my team downfield than Jamarcus Russell.
Now, before we went on the talk, I like Jamarcus Russell. I think the Raiders are the Raiders. They are what they are. I mean, Jamarcus Russell had identical numbers to Kerry Collins, and I think of, 11 touchdowns, maybe 12 interceptions. I don't think that exactly lit the world on fire. You don't want the kid to grow?
I'm not saying that, you know, I wouldn't continue starting Jamarcus Russell. Okay. I'm just saying that right now I think Garcia is a much better quarterback. And hopefully, you know, Russell will develop next year. But really, I mean, how long can you wait for this guy? I know that, you know, his rookie year was sort of compromised because he held out and he really didn't get to play that much. So, in essence, his second year was really his rookie year, and I know that the Raiders owe him at least another year to develop. But really, I mean, if he doesn't step it up in 2009, I mean, you know, it's now or never for Jamarcus Russell. I mean, he's got to show something. We're talking about a guy who's taken first overall. We're not talking about a second-round pick.
Yep. How about Fred Jackson? They said he was absent from the Bills off-season attendance program today. You think he's trying to pull some money out since he knows Marshawn Lynch is going to have a little suspension coming?
Yeah, you know, I mean, every time you hear about something like this, you always have to scratch your head and you wonder, you know, is this really the player who decides not to show up? Or maybe is it the agent who's working in the background that somehow, some way has a little bit of influence over this? I don't know what his motivations are, but, you know, what you're saying or what you're alluding to definitely makes some sense. You know, since Marshawn is going to be out for the first month of the season probably, you know, Fred Jackson's probably saying, hey, man, I'm more valuable right now. You know, maybe he's working his way to make more money. He wants a new contract. I could definitely see that being in the works here.
And also, the Denver Broncos said that there would be an open competition at quarterback between Chris Sims and Kyle Orton. Who do you think is going to come out on top with that job?
I think it's going to be Kyle Orton. You know, the Denver Broncos, before they made that trade, they took a look at all the quarterbacks that were available to them on the teams that were actually interested in Jay Cutler. And the one guy that they pinpointed, the one guy that they really liked after watching some film, was Kyle Orton. You know, I know that, you know, a lot of us fans don't hold him in high regard, and he's not anywhere near a top 10, top 12 quarterback, but he's a smart quarterback. And if you put the right talent around him, he's good enough to win with. You know, he's not going to carry your team on his shoulders, but if he has the right mix of a decent offensive line, good running game, and he certainly has two stud receivers, you know, I think that Kyle Orton is going to be the starting quarterback, at least to start the year for the Denver Broncos.
And also, they said Carlos Dansby fired his agent. He's currently tagged by the Cardinals. Does it seem like the Cardinals just have a hard time getting guys signed? They just like to go around the long way around to get it done. I mean, Dansby, he fires his agent. What do you think is going to happen there? I mean,
I don't see how you can't sign Carlos Dansby. I mean, he showed you in the Super Bowl, you know, how valuable he is to the team. This is the way the Cardinals operate. They're a very thrifty team. You know, the Bidwells, you know, don't like throwing their money around. And, you know, and also, you know, you talk about Carlos Dansby. Well, you know, what about a guy like Anquan Boldin? You know, is he going to get traded or what? I mean, I would have expected something to happen by now. So I don't know. I don't understand the Arizona Cardinals sometimes. They need to take care of their superstars. And when you're talking about Carlos Dansby, when you're talking about Anquan Boldin, you know, those are guys you need to build around. Those are, you know, your foundation guys, and you need to take care of them.
Speaking along the Broncos, we haven't had a chance to talk with the Denver Broncos and Chicago Bears trading with Cutler. Who do you think came out on top with that? Do you think Cutler can duplicate what kind of numbers and career he was having in Denver in Chicago?
You know, the thing about Cutler is he has top five talent in terms of his physical tools, but who are his receivers on the Bears? I mean, do the Bears have a number one receiver? You want to tell me Devin Hester's a number one guy? I don't think he is. You know, their tight end Greg Olsen, we've been waiting for him now for a couple of years, and he hasn't really developed into that star tight end either. And I don't know about Jay Cutler. You know, I think Jay Cutler is the type of guy that when everything's going right, the defense is playing well, the running game is working, Jay Cutler could be a terrific quarterback. However, Jay Cutler is lacking in terms of leadership. When the chips are down, when he needs to lead his team from behind, you know, John Elway style, I don't see Jay Cutler being that type of quarterback. To me, I watched a lot of games. I watched a lot of Denver Bronco games last year, and I saw a lot of situations where the Broncos went down by two touchdowns, and it almost seemed as if Jay Cutler just like totally like dropped his head, dropped his shoulders, and totally gave up. I remember a late season game versus the Carolina Panthers, and his body language was awful. He's immature, and he really needs to, he needs to develop some leadership qualities, because I could see him definitely putting up some good stats, but I don't see him winning any playoff games if he continues being that same quarterback he was with Denver.
Speaking of Jerry Angelo, their GM, Do you think he got one more big trade in him to maybe pull like a Chad Johnson, a Braylon Edwards, or even getting a Bolden? Is there one big last move in him? You think he could do something like that?
I don't see it. I mean, he's already given up a king's ransom for Cutler. You know, I can't see him, you know, giving up more draft picks to bring in a stud receiver. You know, I think he's definitely going to be looking for a receiver at some point in the draft. I don't see him bringing in Braylon Edwards. He just gave up too much for Cutler. They need their draft picks, whatever they have left. So no, I don't see him doing that.
No? Yeah, I think they could, you know, I think Chad Johnson, his value's kind of low. I mean, you know, on the
What are you talking about? Are you talking about a third round or a fourth round pick?
Well, somebody like Chad Johnson, I mean, I know what the Bengals were asking for last year. I mean, they're not going to get
it.
But
what do you think Chad Johnson's worth?
I don't know. Would you give a four up for him?
I'd give up a four for him, yeah.
I don't know
if Cincinnati's looking for a four. They might be looking for a two, you know. If he's available for a fourth round pick, I think Jerry Angelo would probably consider making that type of trade. Absolutely.
And we're speaking with Ralph Mancini of the NFL Draft Bible on Monday Night Lights. I'm your host, Beau Marchant, and we're shooting some NFL talk. Ralph, we're closing in. We're about, two, 3 weeks away from the NFL Draft. Are there any guys that you're excited to see where they're going to land?
Wow. You know, I'm looking at a couple of these pass rushers. I always look at the big guys, the big defensive players. I'm looking at, guys that get me excited. A guy like B.J. Raji is a guy that I definitely think is going to be a top 10 or a top 12 guy in terms of his talent and what he can do at nose tackle or defensive tackle. Another guy that I think has also worked his way up is Everett Brown. He's a guy I love as a pass rusher. He's got the long arms. He's got good leg drive. I'm really excited. You know, if I'm a team looking for a pass rusher, if I'm a team like the Buffalo Bills, who right now have an anemic pass rush, if Everett Brown is there, man, I'm jumping all over that guy.
Now, you're talking defensive. How about the Detroit Lions? You think there's any chance that they pass on the quarterback and go somewhere like with the Everett Brown or even the B.J. Raja?
You talking about with their second pick in the first round?
Yeah.
With their second pick in the first round, I don't think those types of players are going to be available to them most likely. I think that what they might be looking to do, and this is just my guess, I think they might be going with one of the top tackles with their first pick. Maybe a guy like Jason Smith, Eugene Monroe. And with the second pick, they might be looking at quarterback. You know, maybe if Josh Freeman is available to them, maybe they might use that second pick in the first round on Freeman. So I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that they're going to go with Stafford with the first overall pick. I mean, you know, how are you reading the situation?
I don't know. I mean, I keep seeing. I mean, I think they're leaning towards quarterback with the number one pick. Martin Mayhew seems like he's kind of kept everything under tight wraps. They're really not letting a lot of information out to, the media and the outside sources that can get something. To me, I think almost like the Atlanta Falcons, you need that big change and somebody like Stafford, just the face of the franchise, and then that's it. So, you know, almost like the Falcons did last year, they got Matt Ryan and then they got Sam Baker in the second round. So
right.
I kind of look at the Lions doing something like that, getting Stafford, if that's the guy they wish to have, and then going offensive or defensive line with their second number one pick.
And I agree with you. I mean, if I'm picking first overall and looking at these quarterbacks that are going to be available, I mean, I would definitely take Stafford because once you get past Matt Stafford, there isn't going to be any quarterback, in my opinion, close to him as far as being a surefire potential franchise guy later on in the draft or later on in the first round. So I would definitely go that route, but the one thing that makes me kind of doubt that is the fact that, you know, if you heard their new coach, Schwartz, talk in the offseason. One of the things that he said is, I want to be more than an indoor team. I want to be an all-weather team. So that tells me that they really want to focus on improving the running game, and the way you do that is by beefing up that offensive line. So if they're really high on these top two tackles in the draft, then I could definitely see them going after either Smith or Eugene Monroe.
Yeah, and like once again, we're speaking with Ralph Mancini. Ralph, we want to thank you for joining us tonight on Monday Night Lights, and we will talk to you soon.
All right, my pleasure, Bo. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And we were speaking with Ralph Mancini of the NFL Draft Bible. Ton of knowledge in that guy. You want to talk football, that's the guy you want to talk to right there. And we got a caller coming in. No caller?
Yes, Justin.
Hi, Justin. We're speaking with Justin Van Fulpen. How you doing tonight, my man?
Good.
Good. I heard we're going to talk a little Chicago Bear football.
Yeah, definitely. As far as the Bears, you know, making a big trade last week with Jay Cutler going from Denver to Chicago. Chicago giving up two first-round draft picks, a third, and Kyle Orton. So definitely a big move for the Bears. They needed it. You know, as far as with that defense, they have the running game with Matt Forte. And then, you know, if they're Earl Bennett was a big-time receiver with Cutler at Vanderbilt. And then if they can add a receiver and free agency award in the second round of the NFL draft this year, you know, definitely that's a team that could potentially push for, you know, definitely the NFC North title, but if not the NFC championship.
Now, you know, I think they gave up a one this year, one next year, and Kyle Orton, and then the five as well. Do you think the Chicago Bears came out ahead in this trade? I mean, I think most people do, and Jay Cutler immediately, but.
I think it was a bit pricey, you know, giving up two first rounds, Kyle Orton, and then they swapped, you know, they gave up a third, and they got the fifth in return, along with Cutler. But, I mean, I think that was a pricey deal. Now, the question is, what's that second, you know, first-round pick? What's the first-round pick next year? You know, if it's in that, you know, 29, you know, 30, you know, range, then okay. It's not as big a deal. But if they falter and it's a top 10 pick, then whoa, that's a lot to give up. The 18th overall pick, I mean, Chicago probably wasn't going to get Josh Freeman, the Kansas State quarterback. He looks like he's going 17 to the New York Jets if he's still available when they draft. But, you know, so they weren't going to get a franchise quarterback in this year's draft. They were looking at Darius Haywood-Bey, the receiver out of Maryland, at the 18th overall pick, or maybe a Percy Harvin type player. So, yeah, get the impact, the franchise quarterback. That's definitely a guy that's going to upgrade and also be a guy who can be the face of that franchise for the next 8 to 10 years.
Now, looking at their needs, I think it's obvious to anyone they need wide receiver. Their offensive line is old. They brought in Orlando Pace. We'll talk a little about the offensive line first. How much do you think they're going to be able to get out of Orlando Pace? And you had John Tate retiring. Olin Cruz is in their 11th season. Are they going to have enough of a line? Or is Pace going to be able to protect Cutler's backside?
Well, definitely. You also got Chris Williams, the offensive tackle they took out of Vanderbilt last year, who didn't play a lot because of the back injury. And he's a guy who, you know, coming out of college was a consensus, you know, first-round pick, consensus, hey, left tackle of the future. So they can do a couple things. You know, there's some thoughts that, you know, Chris Williams will play on the right side and Pace will play as far as the left tackle. You know, so they can flip-flop those two guys with, you know, Pace getting up in years and having some knee issues. He could just be on the right side, and you let Chris Williams, the second-year tackle, be the left tackle. So there's a lot of options that they have on that offensive line, you know, signing Pace and then Chris Williams coming out, hadn't played, you know, played despairingly last year because of the back injury that he suffered in training camp last season.
And about their wide receivers, you have Rashid Davis, second-year Earl Bennett, and Devin Hester. Do you think – I mean, I think they will address wide receiver at some point in the draft, but if they didn't, with the guys that they have now, will they be able to get by with those three?
You know, I think they're also looking at the free agent market. There's guys like Mike Furry from Detroit, Marvin Harrison from Indianapolis, Torrey Holt from the Rams. So there's some veteran guys if they want to bring them in. One guy you know, mentioned, Earl Bennett, he's a guy who, you know, a lot of people, if it's fantasy guys, I would say he's a fantasy sleeper because Jay Cutler and him went to school at Vanderbilt together. He had his sophomore season was a top SEC performer with Jay Cutler throwing the football. Cutler actually went to his pro day last year and threw Earl Bennett, you know, balls. So they have a great relationship, and I think he could be turn out to be a solid, you know, receiver next year, along with Devin Hester, Rashid Davis. You've got Greg Olsen, the tight end they took in the first round a couple years ago out of Miami, Dallas Clark. So they definitely have some weapons, and last year's rookie Matt Forte led the team in receptions last year. So if they can get, you know, a second-round pick like Hakeem Nicks, Kenny Britt, somebody that might fall, you know, down for that their second-round pick, you know, draft him or sign one of those veteran free agents, you know, I think they're going to be fine, you know, as far as they've got a lot of weapons and they've got that defense to go with it. You know, a lot of people were questioning Cutler's, his winning percentages, but if you looked at when his teams held, when the Broncos defense held teams under 21 points, he was 13-1. And the only loss that he had was against Brett Favre in the overtime where Favre threw a bomb in overtime to win the game against the Broncos. So he gets the defense that he needs, and, you know, this could be a dangerous team come 2009 in the future.
We were speaking earlier with Ralph Mancini, and we talked a little bit about the same topic, and we brought up Greg Olsen. Is it us on the outside expecting too much of Olsen? I mean, has he made enough progress, or, you know, does he need to step it up, or hasn't he had really a chance to step it up because the offense has kind of lacked that passing game, and he might get that chance now with Cutler?
Yeah, definitely. I've been to, you know, far as, you know, last couple of seasons there to the training camps and some practices there with the Chicago Bears. He's a guy who can run great routes. He's got great hands. He's a guy who, you know, you look at the prototypical Miami tight ends, the Kellen Winslows, the Jeremy Shockeys, et cetera, and that's the guy, type of guy he can be. He can be a guy who can line in the slot, you know, as far as being an inline blocker. He can do a lot of things and present a lot of mismatches. And Cutler had that guy in Tony Scheffler when his days in Denver and took advantage of that. And, you know, he's not going to have a Brandon Marshall, so he's going to be looking for that security blank, and I think that's going to be Greg Olsen. I think you're going to see big things for him next season and down the road.
And speaking, we know there got to be some fantasy listeners out there. With the acquisition of Jay Cutler, do you think that's going to improve or decline the Matt Forte numbers?
I think it's going to be improved. I mean, I think Forte's still a guy who you got to draft in the first round in fantasy. You know, he's a top. He's probably that fifth to tenth pick, depending on how many team leagues you're playing in. You know, because he's going to be able to run the ball, and he's going to get a lot more as far as lanes when you're saying, hey, the threat of the passing game with Jay Cutler, and they really didn't have that with Kyle Wharton last year, and look at the yards he put up last season. So I think that's just going to improve his value with the Bears, because the Bears aren't going to change their philosophy just because they got Jay Cutler. They're a run first, play good defense, and go with the play-action pass, and so Cutler's not going to be asked to win the games, and just everything's going to be on the shoulder like it was last year in Denver. It's going to be, you know, as far as more opportunities for Matt Forte. So on the fantasy numbers, I think Forte is a better value than he was last year. And then, you know, Jay Cutler is probably not as good as a fantasy quarterback because he's not going to put up 4,000 yards in 2009 with the Chicago Bears.
And like we were talking earlier, Jerry, at least from what I heard, it seemed like a lot of the Bears players really didn't believe that this trade was going to go down for Cutler. Do you think Angelo has one more big move to maybe acquire like a Chad Johnson, a Bolden, or a Braylon Edwards?
Well, I don't think they got the firepower because they you know, got rid of the two first-round picks, and, you know, they don't think they have the firepower to go get a guy in a trade market. Free agency is definitely some acquisitions. You know, I've talked with, a number of the Chicago Bears players, like a Kevin Payne, the safety there, and he says, hey, he's a great player, a guy that they're looking forward to playing with. As far as, so a lot of the defensive guys are really excited about that because they didn't have that in Kyle Wharton, a guy who, you know, say if the defense gives up, you know, some big plays and some touchdowns to an Adrian Peterson, you know, or a Ryan Grant in that running game, that they know their quarterback can come back and win the game if need to be. So I think the Bears players are excited about the acquisition of Jay Cutler.
And switching to the other side of the ball on the defensive end side, you have solid starters, but it seems like nothing spectacular, especially as the pass rusher. Do you think they'll address that come the second round? Do you think they're going to stick with trying to help Cutler, or do they go on the defensive side of the ball?
Well, I think, like you said, I mean, they had a guy, you know, Alex Brown, who had a Pro Bowl-type caliber year there on the defensive end. Wally Alegunye, he's been kind of declining, and a guy, who could, you know, come on like he did in his rookie year, Mark Anderson, you know,
Mark Anderson.
What did you say?
I said I loved Mark Anderson. I was really, you know, excited watching him. I know he kind of tailed off a little. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, so if he comes back from like he had his rookie season, you know, he definitely had a sophomore slump, and he, you know, but if he can come in and play like he's had, you know, like he's capable of, you know, cause that could be their pass rusher that they're looking for. Now they've got a new defensive line coach, Rod Marinelli, who was the head coach of the Detroit Lions, and his defensive line is his forte, and that's what he was there in Tampa, as successful as their defense was. So, you know, I think their defense is going to be okay. I think before the second round, if a Hakeem Nicks or a Kenny Britt is sitting there, I think the Bears draft him and say, hey, now we've got our running back in Forte, we've got our franchise quarterback in Jay Cutler, and we've got an elite wide receiver in, you know, the second-round draft pick. And, hey, then the rest of their draft, they go on that defensive side of the ball to help address, you know, the monsters of Midway there in Chicago.
Something I'd like to touch base on, because you're our insider here with some Bears, linebacker Nick Roach, what do you expect of him this upcoming season?
Well, he's a guy who, you know, kind of filled in for Hunt Hillemeyer. And, you know, Hillemeyer had a pretty good season. They re-signed Nick Roach, and I think he's definitely a guy who could you come on. You know, he's not going to make the plays that a Brian Urlacher or a Lance Briggs is going to make, but he's definitely a guy who can play well. He fits into that system, that Tampa 2 system, as far as it's that read and react type defense, as far as it's based on speed. So he's definitely a player that, you know, is an up and comer. And they've got Hunt Hillemeyer, who's been a player for the Bears for a number of years.
Speaking of Urlacher, sometimes it, what's his, I mean, the fans, the media in Chicago, is that a good relationship there?
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, as far as he's a guy who, you know, everybody loves there in Chicago. And, you know, the media think sometimes, you know, expects him to be Superman and be, you know, a guy who, you know, can do everything. And he's getting up there in age. But he's still a heck of a middle linebacker, a heck of a guy who can play that Tampa 2 defense and, you know, turn and run with, you know, tight ends and as far as drop into that zone. So, you know, he's definitely a guy who a lot of people are expecting a lot out of. And he's shown over the years to be that Pro Bowl-type caliber of player. Is he the player he was 3 years ago? No. You know, I think injuries and age have caught up with him, but he's definitely as far as a force in the middle of the Bears defense.
And we're talking with Justin Van Poulpin. He's letting us in on some insight with the Chicago Bears and what to expect in the 2009 season. Justin, who are some of the Bears that we should take notice of, that we didn't take notice of last season, that are going to make an impression in 2009?
Well, I think, you know, Kevin Payne, a guy who, as far as a safety, who's come on, you know, to be a third-year player, and last year he started. You know, he was the guy who kind of emerged and no one really talked about in training camp and ended up being the starter. And with the release of Mike Brown, he's going to be asked to do more. They did sign Josh Bullocks from the Saints. So as far as that safety, you know, it's kind of, you know, unsettled because of the release of Mike Brown and the impact that he had. You know, so on the defensive side of the ball, hey, that's a guy, you know, Kevin Payne, I see who can really rise up and play better. You know, on the running back side, I think Garrett Wolf, Pete, they're going to be asking him to do some more things with him as a third down back in this offense. You know, Cutler can throw as far as the screen. He throws a screen pass pretty well, and that's what they're looking to do with Wolf. We had talked already about Earl Bennett. He's definitely an up-and-comer as far as with the acquisition of Jay Cutler. I think you're going to see a guy like Devin Hester really emerge in this offense. Cutler can get the ball downfield, and that's what he can do is he can run those go routes. So, you know, I think you could be a bigger factor in this offense there with Devin Hester.
Yeah, I was actually going to end this by talking a little bit about Devin Hester. What do you think his ceiling is? How good do you think he can be as a wide receiver?
Well, he's a great athlete. I mean, I think we all know that from his return ability and stuff like that. And he's gotten better as the receiving end of it, you know. He's a guy who, you know, still needs to work on his route running and polishing that. But I think as far as what the Bears do with him and the routes they ask him to run are those simple routes, those go routes, those slants, those quick hitches, and get the ball in his hands. So, I think he can be he's not a number one receiver. I don't think he ever will be that number one prototypical receiver, but a good solid receiver who can make plays. And once you get the ball in his hands, he can, take it and make a play 70 yards down the field for a score. So I think the Bears are looking to find different ways for him to get involved in the offense and be able to make plays. And I think as far as with Cutler, there was a lot of times last year where, Orton couldn't get him the ball down the field, and Jay Cutler's got the arm. So if they run a nine route, he's going to be able to go out there and get that ball.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes when I watch the Bears, they kind of remind me of some of, like the Baltimore Ravens before they got Flacco, just the constant, watching the offense was almost painful. And like I said, I'm excited to see how Earl Bennett and, Greg Olsen, all those guys translate with the addition of Jay Cutler. And I think you can almost give the Bears a win or two. It just seems like they're at attitude when you see the guys on TV or you hear them on the radio. I mean, they seem so excited with the addition of Cutler. I think there's almost like a, hey, we can make the Super Bowl again since we got this guy.
Well, I think, you look at them, if their defense can hold up and play like it did, 3 years ago when they did go to the Super Bowl, if they can play that way, they've got a quarterback, which, they had Grossman, who was kind of that, manage the type of the game, don't lose it. Now they got Cutler who can threaten the deep ball and threaten those post routes, as far as the seam routes with Greg Olsen, where they didn't have that in the past probably 20 years since Jim McMahon had played there. So they're excited in Chicago because they haven't had a franchise quarterback in many, many years. And Cutler's a guy who's going to come. He's a native, who grew up right in there in Indiana, right around Chicago, was a Chicago Bears fan. And so the fans are super excited, the media, and I believe that they are, with the Giants, probably the favorites in the NFC coming into this upcoming season in 2009.
Yeah, I could agree with that. And I also want to touch base, and you mentioned him earlier, the addition of Rod Marinelli. It seems like players just love Rod Marinelli. I mean, even all the problems that the Detroit Lions had going 0-16, it seemed like they were still a team that believed in their coach. What's the atmosphere on the defensive side of the ball with the addition of Rod?
Well, Rod's as far as the defensive line coach, and that's what he loves. That's what he does. He was kind of overmatched at being the head coach, but he is a player's coach, and they love to play him. Tommy Harris, like we had mentioned, Mark Anderson, Alex Brown, they're all excited to play for him because they know that he can make them better. He worked with Warren Sapp and Simeon Rice, et cetera, there in Tampa when they were Super Bowl champions. And the Bears feel that, the Bears players feel that, if with the help of Rod Marinelli on that defensive line, that this could be a Super Bowl team here in 2009 in Chicago.
And once again, ladies, we're listening to Justin Van Vulpen of the NFL Draft Bible, helping us here with the Chicago Bears. We want to thank you for joining us tonight on the Monday Night Lights, and talk to you soon.
Thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Yep, thank you. And that was Justin Van Vulpen, Chicago Bull Bears guy, giving us all the insight you're going to need. I hope the Bears fans were listening, because if you were, you got a lot of news there. And we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be back and speak with former Akron Zip Andrew Johnson.
I'm Rob Reed of BaseballGeeks.com and PlayerTrack.com. Since 2006, Greg Kier and I have been bringing you podcasts on baseball news, where we view the latest in baseball news with our fantasy baseball-colored sunglasses. We are proud to be a part of the Fantasy Sports Channel at BlogTalkRadio.com. Listen to us live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at BlogTalkRadio.com/BaseballGeeks. And listen to two average Joes talk about the game that we love.
Are you one of the millions of American fantasy owners who suffer from fantasy sports failure syndrome, or FSFS? If so, coming in January 2009, a new fantasy site hits the web to cure this crippling disease. FantasyPros901.com will provide you with the essentials to win your leagues, with products like our Fantasy Draft Guide, daily podcasts, daily expert articles, and the best support team anywhere on the web. Tell your doctor you need FantasyPros901.com for your fantasy sports failure syndrome now.
Fantasy versus Reality, the show in which guys and girls are just sitting around the bar talking sports and sharing opinions. Tune in next Thursday at 11 p.m. Eastern. Don't be late or you'll be kaboomed. More live fantasy sports radio than anyone on the planet. 7 continuous hours of football, baseball, basketball, and hockey action each Monday through Friday. Plus 7 hours of game day frenzy on Sunday. 30 shows in all from the best fantasy sportscasters in the business, like Craig Davis of FantasyFootball.com, the Audible Cecil Lammy, Paul Greco of Melnick and Greco Fantasy Sports, and the Fantasy Football guys Lyle Conkiel and Kevin Moore. The Fantasy Sports Channel, only on Blog Talk Radio. It's a schedule you can bet on.
And welcome back to Monday Night Lights. I'm your host, Bo Marchant, and we're joined by former Akron Zip, Andrew Johnson. How you doing tonight, Andrew?
I'm good. How you doing?
Good, man. How things been going for you?
Everything's been pretty good. You know, just been, took a few days off and kind of rested up from the workouts and everything, and really getting back into the flow of training again.
The last time we spoke, you were working out for the Indianapolis Colts. And now there's a little confusion here on somebody had you clocked at a 4.32, is that correct?
That's what the laser timer had.
And
that Echo supervisor.
And you're trying to get Akron to post that, right?
Yeah, I think my agent was on that. So no, I'm really not big into the talking to the coaches and all the other things. I'm just working out.
Ha ha. And for the people listening, we had Andrew on a few weeks ago. He's from Pittsburgh, played his high school ball there. He went on to play for the Miami Hurricanes. He battled some injuries, and after Larry Coker was dismissed, I think Andrew felt that it might be in his best interest to kind of regroup, and he found himself with the Akron Zips. You're about, 5'11", 215, 4'3 speed. Have you been talking to any teams?
Not after Pro Day. I haven't talked to anyone. And I know that, the Bears are supposed to be in this week. They assured our scouting guy. So, you know, hopefully maybe another workout, maybe interview. I have no idea. He really didn't say in particular what he was looking for. So we'll see when that comes up.
The last time we talked, you were walking away with the Colts scout guy. Were you going off to do the Wonderlic test? You said you had to sign some papers. What they have you do?
It was I don't think it was the Wonderlic. It was a PS-16 test, I think, and it was another test, which was about 108 questions. So,
108
like the Wonderlic.
Wow. How was it? Was it hard?
Nah, it was really common sense questions or really how you view things as a person. It really wasn't a test of what you know, just seeing what kind of person you are.
And we talked earlier, you say your game kind of reminds you of Willie Parker of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Do you want to let the people out there know what kind of style you have and what you think your best attribute to the game is?
Basically, my biggest attribute is my size and speed combination. You know, and that produces power. I mean, I can run inside, outside, catch the ball, you know, and working with Coach Stollinger in Miami really helped the pass protection part of my game. So, I mean, a lot of teams are looking for a complete back. And given the situation, you know, that's what I am, you know, when given the opportunity to show that. So really my biggest attribute is really my speed because, you know, you can't hit what you can't touch, right?
That is correct. And, you know, I like to tell people, you know, when you were recruited by Miami, Miami was the king of the hill. I mean, they were producing guys like James and McGahee, Portis, and Frank Gore. I mean, that's just the running back. I mean, that was the powerhouse of football. So I think you getting to go to Miami just shows you what kind of elite talent that you are. And like I said, you know, you had some dings and some freakish injuries like – during Akron, you got the stinger in the neck, which is, I mean, that's a rarity, and you're 100% healthy now. And you said you took a couple days rest because you've had a rough month, man. What, the 18th, you guys were supposed to do your pro day. It got canceled. You had to regroup for the 25th, and then you had to come back again for the Colts. So did you finally get a few days off to chill and relax?
I got a few days off, but, you know, nothing really. You know, there's not so much rest you can get right about now. It's all about just grinding and getting better. So not too much off time. Cause I know somebody else is still out there working, and I can't get past that, you know. I'm trying to catch some people now.
So, I mean, have you been getting any good vibes? Has you, Scott, your agent, Scott Toll, has he been telling you any good news, anything to share with us?
Scott and Matt Watkins have really been, you know, telling me good things. You know, right now I'm just in a better situation than I was before because of the time I ran. So, I mean, we put our best foot forward right now. You know, we're all in, and hopefully it works out.
Excellent. And once again, we're speaking with former Akron Zip Andrew Johnson. Andrew, we wanted to thank you tonight for joining us on the Monday Night Lights powered by All Access Football. And you can go and listen to Andrew's other taped interviews on Blog Talk Radio or at the NFLDraftBible.com. And say hello to your father, Ambrose. I enjoyed speaking with him. He's, we both got our eye on you, and we're both wishing you the best moving forward.
Thank you, and thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
No problem. That was Andrew Johnson, like I said, former Akron Zip. You know, ladies and gentlemen, you guys got a, you know, a guy with that speed, 5'11", 215, that's can't miss type quality there, and hopefully he will get his shot with an NFL ball club. And our small school insider for the NFL Draft Bible, Josh Buchanan, is joining us now. Josh, how are you tonight?
Good. How about you guys?
Oh, I'm great. I'm great. A lot of questions I want to ask you tonight, Josh. I think I'm gonna. I know you got the knowledge to feel what I'm gonna ask. Early on, I wanted to ask you, and I heard when you came on, I think a few weeks ago for Monday Night Lights when they had Ramses Barden on, 6'6", 229. They said he ran like a 4.51 official, 4.4 unofficial. What type of skills do you think he's going to bring to the NFL, and do you think it's going to be a while before he adjusts to the NFL game?
Yeah, that's a good question. You never really know. It always depends. A lot of times it depends on the team and that type of thing. But Ramsey is a very smart guy. You know, he's a hard worker. He brings physical tools that you can't teach, you know, physical tools that are very rare. I think with his, you know, with the fact that he uses his body so well and the fact that he's just a playmaker on the field, I believe that he'll be a solid player from the get-go. And when I say that, I mean as a rookie, I think he'll be a solid player. I'm not saying, you know, week one, but as a, I think he should have a good rookie season. I really expect him to get better as we go because, you know, he's a guy that I think we'll have to adjust a little bit because he lacks explosiveness and the top-end speed. But he could be an excellent possession guy that is nightmares for opposing defenses in the goal line and in the red zone. So, you know, he's a guy that I fully expect to do well from the get-go. And like I say, he's a very smart guy. He'll pick up the schemes very quickly, and he's a hard worker who always does the right thing. You know, he's the prototype off the field as well. So any team that gets him, wherever they get him, will be lucky to have a guy like that.
And another guy I'm interested in hearing your take on is Bernard Scott, the running back from Abilene Christian. You can tell the folks out there, I know he's had some troubles in the past, and have you had any knowledge or heard anything where you think he's going to be able to kind of, you know, get those problems behind him moving forward?
You know, I think he will. My recent run-ins with him, I was very impressed. I talked with him as a junior and as a senior, and I think he's matured a lot in the last year and grown up. I think he realizes that coming from a small school, you have to stay clean. You know, he can't get in trouble because they'll quickly throw him to the side because he's not, you know, he's not as indispensable as, you know, a big school guy, you know, where, you know, he shows immaturity and he could fall out of the draft completely. a guy rated first or second round could show a little immaturity, and, you know, they'll probably get drafted late. I mean, heck, if Maurice Claret can go third round, I mean, I guess anybody can go. But, you know, in his case, I do think he's learned, and I think he'll be fine in the NFL. He was the best running back I saw in El Paso, bar none, and he's one of the best running backs I had seen all year long. I would put his game up there with the guys that are getting second and third round talks. I really would. I'd like to see him bulk up. He needs to gain weight. He's about 195 pounds, but I really, his running style, he's such great balance and vision. He's like a cat. He's always on his feet. You know, you can never bring him down. So just an excellent back and a guy that if he stays clean and learns from his mistakes, I expect him to have a good 10-year career in the NFL.
And I was checking out your small school mock draft, which I love to do, dude. How long does that take you to do? To go through all those rounds with the small group guys, man?
I did each round, you know, in a day. But each round probably takes me about 30 to 40 minutes to do.
That's it. Wow. I'd be there all day doing that.
Well, no, I've already got a big board. I've already got the players rated, you know, top 250 to 300 already. I just don't put that out in public view. So pretty easy for me to scroll down the board and just, you know, cut and paste it into a separate file and delete a guy as I draft him. So not as hard as you think. Really takes more time to type all of it in than to, you know, pick the guys. Picking the guys is the easy part. It's just typing it all in, to be honest. And I left comments out on the first one, although I'll do another one, a three-round one. The first one was not based on need. Somebody had commented on that. It was more based on value at that point. Now, the value of some guys have changed a little bit since then. And, you know, teams have moved around in the draft and needs have changed somewhat. The week before the draft, I do a three-round mock with, you know, team needs taken into account. So that was why, because I know someone had asked me why you had a team taking a running back when they were loaded there. It was the best player available. But, you know, people have to realize this, too. On draft day, a lot of teams don't draft off of need. Sometimes, and that's when you get messed up. You have to take the best player available. Now, if you have three or four guys rated very closely, then you go need. Or if you have the number one overall pick, you're obviously looking for a lot of different things. So, you know, a lot of teams are not going to draft purely off need. Need, you know, will, you know, affect who you're drafting, but it's not the pure thing, you know, the pure reason for drafting a guy. Although, like I said, it will be heavily need-based when I do my second one.
Now, I was checking out your small school mock draft. You had, like, Lawrence Sidberry, number one, and Rashad Jennings, two players that I like a lot, especially Sidberry. You want to talk a little bit about those two guys and what their chances are in the April draft?
Yeah, both of them have some things about them that are incredible that you probably won't find from you know, you won't find more than one other guy at their position who brings that, you know, one of the things they have to the table. But then you'll also find that most of the top-rated players are much better in an area. You know, Sidberry, his motor isn't always running. He's a guy, if you watch the Montana tape, he tore it up during the season. A player that's not even being talked about as a draft pick, Javon Belcher from Maine, was the defensive player of the year in the league. So tells you something when the coaches and SIDs vote him over Sidberry, and we clearly have seen since the championship game that Sidberry is the best prospect, you know, in that conference and probably among the small schools, period. So that is a concern. I want to see that he, you know, his motor is constantly running. Jennings is a guy who doesn't have great top-end speed, but he's a very strong back, very smart, great off-the-field guy. He's the type of guy you would love to have lead your franchise. Sidberry as well. Sidberry is a very good kid. You know, he's your ideal off-the-field, extremely athletic. You know, I think Jennings is a guy who has deceiving speed. He's a little faster than the 40 time indicates, I believe. But both players bring phenomenal traits that are just phenomenal to the table, and both of them have some things about them that are less than average or things that you would want, you know, things that late-round picks have and not top three or four-round picks. But I like them both. I think Jennings could be an excellent back from the start in the NFL. I think he'd be a very good number two back or number three back from the start. I think Sidberry's a guy that, needs to, needs some work. He needs some technique adjustments. He needs to be taught a little bit and refine his technique. But I think, by year two or three, he could be a very good pass rusher in the NFL. I don't know if he could be an every down guy yet. He needs to work on that. But definitely a third down guy or a pass rush specialist. His quickness and explosiveness, the only other guy in the draft who has that is Connor Barwin. So, he's got that rare speed and explosiveness. So some team is going to likely overdraft based on where he is now in his development because of the fact that he's got physical tools and athletic ability that, really nobody else has out of a pure defensive end.
And we're speaking to Josh Buchanan, NFL Draft Bible Small School Insider. Josh, a name like Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie comes to mind, and Tennessee State, small school, and there's so much out there now for the public to see. I don't think it's like years ago. With so much attention, it's really hard to hide these guys. I mean, you got a guy like yourself who's hitting the beat every day, getting these names out there. Do you think this is going to see? We're going to see really noticeable in the years to come that these small school guys are going to start making a bigger and bigger impact in the NFL draft?
Yeah, I think they could. I've already said it previously. I think the fastest man at the scouting combine next year will be from a Division II school. I've already put that out there. I believe after seeing some of the early spring numbers. And hearing through tidbits through players and coaches and league sources that there'll be probably a Division II player, the fastest man at the scouting combine next year, and he may challenge very closely to Deion Sanders' supposed record, his handheld record. He may very well challenge that. I think they are. I think you get to these all-star games, and oftentimes, every time I go, there's always two or three small school guys that are either the best at their position or one of the best there, period. It seems like these guys are just stepping to the plate when they get a chance to shine and taking advantage of it. And I think that's the big thing. And so, yes, I think they are. I think guys are – a lot of quality players are seeing that you can go high, go into a small school. You look at Matt Cassel. Anyone ever wondered where he would have gotten drafted had he played gone to a school where he actually could have played instead of being a backup? You see his talent is like he probably could have been a second round pick. If he would have done the Joe Flacco route instead of sticking around. I think it's going to pick up now. I'm not sure we're going to see two first-round picks like we did last year. It definitely won't happen this year, I don't think. And next year, based on what I've seen so far, I don't see it happening, although I see a lot of very talented guys, I've seen in the mid to late rounds for this year and for next year. So, I do think it's going to pick up some. The funny thing is it used to be better than it was. It actually started dipping down the numbers. If you look – for a few years, the small school draft picks, especially FCS or 1AA picks, started to decline a little bit. It got as low as just below 14 FCS players and I want to say less than 20 small school players one year. I think it was 19 or 17 total. But it's starting to pick up lately. So I think maybe it might, it could be a trend because it's happened before. But, based on some of the future talent I'm seeing, at least for the next two or three years, there are going to be very good drafts from the small schools for sure.
And a guy that I like a lot, at least what I've seen from him is Cyrus Molitalo out of Sacramento State. Do you have any takes on him and what do you think his chances are making it to the next level?
He won't get drafted. He's too short. He's about a 4.8 or 4.9 guy in the 40. I hate it for him because he's such a short guy. And coming from a small school, it kills you. But he's a very good player. I thought he was one of the better linebackers in the Big Sky this past year, which, you say, wow, was an FCS conference. Yeah, but look at the linebackers in that league. There was a lot of talent there defensively, or at least at linebacker in that conference. He was one of the better guys there. I think he's a guy that would have to get in the right situation to make it. He's got a family member, Edwin Mulitalo, who's in the NFL now. I think he'll get into camp, but You know, if I had to say will he make it or not, I would say 50-50. It's going to heavily depend on the team he gets with and, you know, basically if whether or not he can play special teams for them.
And hypothetically, if I gave you $1,000 and sent you to Vegas and you could bet on one of these small school guys, who do you think is going to turn out to be the best pro out of some of the guys you covered out of this year's draft?
Best pro, that's a tough one.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. You know, if I had to bet, I'm really torn here because I'm thinking of three or four guys, you know, that I would put in that mold.
Give us
I can only bet on one. You know, if I had to say the one that I think will be the best, to me the safest pick is Ramsey's Bard, just because of the fact that he doesn't have to be this 4'3 guy or 4'4 guy at 6'6, 227 pounds. He really doesn't, you know. So 4'5s are plenty good for a guy his size. People don't realize how freakish it is to run a 4'5'1 at 6'6, 227 pounds. I don't think people – there are defensive ends in college that are that size, 6'6, 230. You know, and they run like 4.7s. So I don't think people realize just how great it is to, you know, run that or how impressive it is to run that. So I would say him. I think Barden is probably going to be the safest, although I like guys like Roger Allen, Rashad Jennings, Rhett Bomar. I think they'll be safe picks. I think that Jason Boltis is going to be a very surprising guy at the next level. You know, there's a lot of guys in this class I like. So, but if I had to pick one, I'd go with Barden.
And how about looking next year, Josh? I mean, I know there's a couple guys I like, and I know you mentioned Austin Lane from Murray State. Any other guys that you like heading into next season?
Yeah, I like Lane a lot. He's 6'6", 259 pounds, about a 4'7 guy in the 40. I like the Citadel receiver, Andre Roberts. The main reason I love him, he's gained weight. He's bulked up. He's not 175 like most people think. He's around the 190 range, running 4.4s, great special teams ability. I like the Newberry receiver, Kelson Tindall. I think the sky's the limit with him. There's an athletic tackle that used to play tight end at Northern Iowa, Austin Howard. I think the sky's the limit with him as well. Funny thing, there are some really good receivers next year. There's a receiver at Montana, Mark Mariani. There's a big kid just like Ramsey's Barden at Colgate, Pat Simmons. There's a very athletic tackle at Hillsdale College, Jared Valdir. He's like 6'8", 321 pounds, ran 4.87 and 4.94 at his junior pro day. There's a lot of talented guys out there. I'll throw one name at you that is going to be a sleeper. Nobody knows who he is right now. But keep an eye on him because he will be on the NFL radar, is Division III's Kenyon College, Harry Von Kahn, number 82 from Kenyon College. Big receiver, had decent numbers last year, but he's a guy that will be on the radar. Look out for him as a potential late rounder that is really nobody really knows of right now. So those would be a few of the names I would mention. There are some other guys out there I like, but waiting to verify some information on them, so I don't want to put that out there quite yet.
Josh, I could listen to you talk. If I could make this show another hour longer, trust me, man, I would do it. I love hearing all these little tidbits and little new guys that you know about but nobody else knows about. Like I said, we're speaking with Josh Buchanan, NFL Draft Fiver, small school insider, and like I said, if you want to visit the NFL Draft Bible, go online. You can see his mock draft there. He got all six rounds of small school guys. And like I said, he said it takes him about a day, about 40 minutes to do a round. Some other guys I'd like to pick your brain on is Nathan Brown. And then I'd also like to ask you if there's any small school safeties, hard hitters out there that might make an impression in the NFL this season.
Yeah, Nathan Brown's an interesting one because he's not very big. You know, he's a shade under 6'1". The thing I feel bad about him is in workouts, you know, his grade when the season ended, I felt really bad because I had given him a fifth-round grade. And then I'm sitting there and I say, you know, the postseason is not his ideal thing. I mean, the practices at the Senior Bowl, that's not ideal. The workouts at the Combine, that's not – he is not a workout guy. He's a game guy. And even then, he's a smaller guy. So I think he'll be a backup, you know, second or third stringer in the NFL. I don't ever see him starting because he's got a lot of limitations, but he's a gamer. He's a guy that I could easily see having an excellent preseason this fall, facing second and third stringers, defensive players. And I think he could be a guy that has an excellent preseason, like I say, and is a decent backup. I just don't think he's limited physically to where he's not going to be any more than that. And I hate to say that because he's an excellent young man and he's a heck of a player coming out of this level. But just at his size, he's not incredibly fast. He's got somewhat of a quirky sidearm motion. I just really don't see him being more than that. If he got cut and ended up in Canada, I could see that because he's got a little bit of mobility to him, and he's a gunslinger. He can throw the ball all over the field. So I could see that, but I really hope he makes it in the NFL because, like I say, he's an excellent man, young man off the field and a very, you know, very talented player. Like I say, he's a gamer. Safety's coming from the small school this year. It's interesting you ask that because there's really not a whole lot in regards to safeties. The only few out there, one of them is Ladarius Webb from Nicholls State. Now, he played safety in college. Now, some people are talking about moving him to corner. Some are talking about keeping him at safety. He's a guy that will light you up. He's only 5'10", 179 pounds, has 4.4 speed, but he will light you up. The only other safeties out there to really keep an eye on at this point, I'm going to throw two names out. Both of them are flying heavily under the radar. If either of them got drafted late, it would not surprise me at all, is Thomas Nelson from Illinois State, 5'11", 193, ran 4.47 at his pro day, and Colt Anderson from Montana. We had him out in El Paso. He's about 5'10", 194 pounds, runs 4.5, not your ideal athlete, but will hit you, has great range, and was a very productive player at Montana. And obviously Montana's had several guys drafted over the last few years. So I would say he's another one. But, yeah, those three guys, I could see all three of them being drafted. I think Webb will for sure. Anderson and Nelson are two to look out for in the late rounds. Past that, really not much depth. A couple of free agents to look out for, maybe Eric Johnson of William Jewell, and Drew Mack of Towson and Jeffrey Jack at Grambling. But like I say, just those three guys that could possibly sneak into the draft.
And, you know, I've mentioned it. I talk to most of the small school guys when we do, like, our player spotlight interviews, and it seems like they all kind of share the same attitude, you know, that, you know, I talked to Chauncey Calhoun from Grand Valley State, and for him, even he had his pro day at North Dakota State, you know, and, you know, like you said, it's just hard getting noticed, even though he played in one of the season games after the season ended. Do you think we'll ever see a day where the NFL has, or even like a private, you know, business somehow does like a small school combine or something, so more scouts can see more of these small school kids at once instead of kind of dispersing scouts all throughout the nation?
You know, I've always thought about that. One thing that I thought maybe that Blesto should put on a combine and maybe invite, you know, the top 60 guys that are not going to the NFL scouting combine or the top 50 to try and encompass a lot of these guys that we know, you know, a few of these guys that got snubbed, like Jason Williams of Western Illinois, even some of these big school guys like Larry Summers at UNLV, Sebastian Vollmer at Houston, a lot of these guys, mid-major guys at the Division I level or the FBS level. I don't think they ever will, although I do think that they probably should reach out and have some, you know, people that are, you know, designated for the small schools because it's very easy for a guy to get overlooked. You know, I mean, Marcus Melee, the fullback at Weber State, will probably get drafted, and he wasn't even on the radar in the spring. Or, you know, in the fall, or entering the fall because of the fact that he wasn't put on their list in the spring. So I do think it's a situation they need to address. financially, though, right now, is that would be spending more money. It's just not going to happen with the current economy. But maybe down the line, you know, I think it's something they need to do. Will they do it? I'm not sure, because I don't know their thoughts. There's still, though, regardless of the success of these guys, we still have to keep in mind that 80 to 85% of the players in the NFL, especially the ones who are contributing heavily, are from Division I schools or from FBS schools. That's one thing people have to remember. You know, you got about 15-20% that are from the small schools, although, you know, 10% of those guys, half of those guys, are very good players in the NFL, so, or solid starters. So it's one of those things where, percentage-wise, I'm not sure that they ever would, although I think they need to, because there are definitely guys who get overlooked. Greg Toler, St. Paul's College, perfect example of a guy that should have been at the combine. You know, he has the physical tools. Why wasn't he? You know, a lot of scouts don't even know where St. Paul's is, and it's in, which is in Virginia. You know, some of them don't even know what state it's in. It's a school that's in the, it literally is in the woods. So, you know, there are schools like that that I think that they really need to reach out more to, because I have a feeling there are a couple guys every year that maybe don't ever get a chance in the NFL that have the ability, but they're just not seen. Their schools are, you know, in the sticks somewhere, and nobody ever sees them.
I heard you mention Weber State. What do you think of J.D. Folsom, the linebacker from Weber State? Where do you think you project him as a free agent linebacker, or he has any chance to get drafted?
No chance to get drafted. Maybe a free agent. You know, he's got pretty good size to him. He's a guy, though, you know, the buzz coming out of Weber was the fullback. It wasn't J.D. Even the offensive tackle, Paul Carpenter there, the guy that was on some lists. But the fullback was one getting all the attention. I know a lot of teams went through Weber. Really no buzz on him. I think he's probably 50-50 to get in the camp. I'm not going to lie, I have not cross-checked him since early in the season, so I'm not even sure what his pro day numbers were, just because of the fact I've been working on junior since December, and unless the guy was already on my list. But I am aware of him. You know, he's a guy I think should get in the camp, should get a tryout, but I don't know his actual numbers, you know, his pro day numbers or anything like that. So it would be tough to say, unless he had a good pro day workout. You know, I would say that'd be his only chance would have been to have had a good workout.
And Josh, we're going to switch it up here. We've got a few minutes left, and you know, when I listen to you, I always hear you share your small school news. Who are some of the big Division I guys? You know, the big boys. You know, that are available. Who are some of your favorites from that side of it?
From the big boys, are you talking about late rounds or
yeah,
overall?
I'm talking about the cream of the crop, your B.J. Rajis and your Matthew
Stafford. Cream
Staff
of the crop.
My
favorite guys, Aaron Curry of Wake. You know, I have a lot of questions about B.J. Raji and Matthew Stafford. I wouldn't take either one in the top 15 of the draft, to be honest with you. I like Eugene Monroe at Virginia. I like Aaron Curry a lot. I think Arakpo could be a very good 3-4 guy in the NFL. Sanchez is a guy that, you know, it's funny, I like his game, but I really think, you know, Pete Carroll knows what takes place in the NFL, and the fact that he was against him coming out says a lot to me. So he's a guy that would have a red flag in my mind simply because of that, and the fact I know Pete Carroll is not selfish and that he has advised players to come out early, you know, but he felt that Sanchez shouldn't. So obviously there's something there. I trust his opinion. He knows talent. He knows especially his guys. So, you know, that's one of the higher rated guys I have questions about. But like I say, Curry, Monroe, I like Jason Smith a lot. I think he could be an excellent run blocker in the NFL. There are not a ton of guys out there that I look at as a can't miss prospect. And those are the names that I like to bring up. I think Clay Matthews could be a can't-miss guy. I really like what he brings. Darius Butler, the corner from UConn, is another one. I wish Alphonso Smith was 5'11", because he'd be a top-10 pick. You know, so those are some of the names I really like. And I'll throw in Connor Barwin as well, because I really think his upside and athletic ability will make him an excellent pro.
Excellent. And Josh, we've got about a minute left. Looking to next year's draft, what are your thoughts on USC's Taylor Mays?
Mays, I love Taylor Mays. The big kid, he'll hit you. He was, you were asking about guys who will hit you. Big kid, mean, great range. He'll knock your helmet off of you. I like Mays a lot. I have him in the top five heading into next season.
Excellent. And, Josh, we want to thank you for joining us on Monday Night Lights. Always enjoy reading your work. You're a man that knows this stuff, and thanks for joining us tonight.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks a lot.
No problem. That was Josh Buchanan, NFL Draft Bible Small School Insider, and we're going to shut things down. Thanks for joining us tonight on Monday Night Lights, and remember to check out www.nfldraftbible.com.